Sir Gregory Parslow Parslow, afraid of the scurrilous revelations in Galahad's memoirs, had consulted Percy Pilbeam, the private detective. Pilbeam, encouraged by an offer of £500, had agreed to attempt to steal the manuscript. Oblivious of this dastardly plot, the Honourable Galahad Threepwood, having re-read the half-dozen pages which he had written since luncheon, attached them with a brass paper fastener to the main body of his monumental work and placed the manuscript in its drawer. He left the small library and, descending the broad staircase, observed Beach in the hall below. The butler was standing mountainously beside the tea-table, staring in a sort of trance at a plateful of anchovy sandwiches. "Beach," he said, speaking over the banisters. The butler jerked from his reverie, jumped a couple of inches, and shook all over in a manner that was most trying to watch. "I beg your pardon, sir. Why on earth do you spring like that when anyone speaks to you? I've noticed it before. He leaps," he said complainingly to his niece Millicent, who now came down the stairs in slow, listless steps. "When addressed, he quivers like a harpooned whale."
"Oh," said Millicent dully.
She dropped into a chair and picked up a book. She looked like something that might have occurred to Ibsen in one of his less frivolous moods.
"I am extremely sorry, Mr. Galahad."
"Well, there's no use being sorry. Thing is not to do it. If you're practicing for the shimmy for the servants' ball, be advised by an old friend and give it up. You haven't the build."
"I think I may have caught a chill, sir."
"Well, take a stiff whiskey toddy. Put you right in no time. What's the car doing out there?"
"Her ladyship ordered it, sir. I understand that she and Mr. Baxter are going to Market Blandings to meet the train arriving at 4:40.
"Oh, somebody expected?"
"The American lady, sir, Miss Schoonmaker."
"Oh, yes, of course, I remember, yes. She arrives today, does she?"
"Yes, sir." The Hon. Galahad mused.
"Schoonmaker, I used to know old Johnny Schoonmaker. Well, a great fella. Mixed the finest mint juleps in America. Ever tasted a mint julep, Beach?"
"Not to my recollection, sir."
The butler passed from the hall with heavy, haunted steps, and the Honourable Galahad turned to his niece.
"What's that book you're reading?"
"It belongs to Aunt Constance."
Millicent glanced wanly at the cover.
"It seems to be about theosophy."
"Theosophy? Fancy a young girl in the springtime of life. What the devil has happened to everybody in this house? Some excuse, perhaps, for Clarence. If you admit the possibility of a sane man getting attached to a beastly pig, he has a right to be upset. But what's wrong with all the rest of you? Ronald goes about behaving like a bereaved tomato. Beach springs up and down when you speak to him. And that young fellow Carmody."
"I am not interested in Mr. Carmody."
"There are mysteries afoot in this house," said the Honourable Galahad, "and I don't like 'em. In my young days, a girl of your age would have been upstairs making an apple-pie bed for somebody instead of lolling on chairs reading books about theosophy."
Snorting once more, the Honourable Galahad disappeared towards the smoking room. In the hall, he encountered his brother Clarence, and there was in Lord Emsworth's bearing so strange a gaiety that he stood transfixed. It seemed to the Honourable Galahad years since he'd seen anyone looking cheerful at Blandings Castle.
"Good God, Clarence, what's happened? What, my dear fella? Your wreathed smiles, dash it, and skipping like the high hills. Found that pig under the drawing-room sofa or something?"
Lord Emsworth beamed.
"I have had the most cheering piece of news, Galahad. That detective, the one I sent young Carmody to see, the Argus man, you know, he's come after all. He drove down in his car and is at this moment in Market Blandings at the Emsworth Arms. He rang up to ask if I still required his services."
"Well, you don't." "Certainly I do, Galahad. I consider his presence vital. He can't tell you any more than you already know. There's only one man who can have stolen that pig, and that's young Parslow."
"Precisely, yes. Yeah, quite true, quite true, quite true. Well, this man will be able to collect dividends and bring the thing home and, bring it home. He has a trained mind. I consider it most important that the case should be in the hands of a man with a trained mind. He's having what he describes as a bit of a snack at the Emsworth Arms. When he's finished, he will drive over. I'm delighted. Ha-ha! Constance, my dear."
Lady Constance Keeble, attended by the efficient Baxter, had appeared at the foot of the stairs. His lordship eyed her warily.
Constance, my dear, a friend of mine is arriving this evening to spend a few days. I forgot to tell you."
"Well, we have plenty of room for him," replied Lady Constance with surprising amiability. "There's something I forgot to tell you, too. We are dining at Matchingham tonight."
"Matchingham? With whom?"
"Sir Gregory, of course. Who else do you suppose it could be?"
"What?"
"I had a note from him after luncheon. It is short notice, of course, but that doesn't matter in the country. He took it for granted that we would not be engaged."
Constance!
Lord Emsworth swelled slightly.
Constance, I will not! Dash it, I will not dine with that man! And that's final.
Lady Constance smiled, a sort of lion-tamer's smile. She had foreseen a reaction of this kind.
Please do not be absurd, Clarence. I have already accepted for you Galahad, myself, and Millicent.
Indeed. And what about my friend arriving this evening?
He can look after himself for a few hours, I should imagine.
Ah, that abominable rudeness, you think it. I invite my friend Pilbeam here to pay us a visit, and the moment he arrives, we meet him at the front door, dash it, and say, Ah, there you are, Pilbeam. Well, amuse yourself, Pilbeam, we are off. And this Miss American girl, what'll she think?
Did you say Pilbeam?
Asked the Hon Galahad.
It is no use talking, Clarence. Dinner is at 8.
Once and for all, I tell you.
At this moment, an unexpected ally took the arena on Lady Constance's side.
Of course we must go, Clarence,
said the Hon Galahad. And Lord Emsworth, spinning round to face this flank attack, was surprised to see a swift, meaning wink come and go on his brother's face.
Nothing gained by having unpleasantness with your neighbours in the country never pays.
Exactly,
said Lady Constance, a little dazed at finding the Saul among the prophets, but glad of the helping hand.
And young Parslow, not such a bad chap, Clarence. Lots of good in Parslow. We shall have a pleasant evening.
I am relieved to find that you, at any rate, have sense, Galahad, said Lady Constance handsomely.
Come, Mr. Baxter, we shall be late.
The sound of the car's engine had died away before Lord Emsworth's feelings found relief in speech.
Galahad, my dear fellow,
it's all right, Clarence, my boy. I know what I'm doing. I have the situation well in hand.
Dine with Parslow after what has occurred? It's impossible. Why on earth the man's inviting us, I can't understand.
I suppose he thinks if he gives us dinner, I shall relent and omit the prawn story.
That's a clever move. Not that it'll work.
But what do you want to go for?
Shall I tell you something, Clarence? Something that'll interest you?
Certainly, my dear fellow, certainly, most decidedly.
Something that will bring the sparkle to your eyes?
By all means, I shall enjoy it.
You know what we're going to do tonight? After dining with Parslow and sending Constance back in the car?
No.
We are going to steal his pig, my boy.
What?
It came to me in a flash while Constance was talking. Parslow stole the Empress. Very well. We'll steal Pride of Matchingham. Then we'll be in a position to look young Parslow squarely in the eye and say, What about it?
Lord Emsworth swayed gently. His brain, never a strong one, had tottered perceptibly on its throne.
Galahad! Only thing to do. Reprisals. Recognize military maneuver. But how? Galahad, how can it be done?
Easily. Puffy Benter and I stole old Wyvenhoe's pig at Hammers Easton in the year 95. We put it in Plug Basham's bedroom, and we'll put Parslow's pig in a bedroom, too.
In a bedroom?
Well, a sort of bedroom.
We're going to put it in that caravan that your flower-pot-throwing friend Baxter arrived in.
Nobody's going to think of looking in there.
Then we'll be in a position to talk terms to young Parslow, and I think he will very soon see the game is up.
"Leave the door open, Beach,"
said Lady Constance.
"Very good, your ladyship.
I think the smell of wet earth and the flowers is so refreshing, don't you?"
The butler did not. He was not one of your fresh-air men. Rightly conjecturing, however, that the question had been addressed not to him but to the girl in the beige suit who had accompanied the speaker up the steps, he forbore to reply. He cast an appraising, bulging-eyed look at this girl and decided that she met with his approval. He liked her face, and he liked the way she dressed. As far as Beach was concerned, Sue had passed the censor.
"I don't think the shower will last long," said Lady Constance.
"No," said Sue, smiling brightly.
"And now you must be wanting some tea after your journey."
"Yes," said Sue, smiling brightly. It seemed as if she had been smiling brightly for centuries. The moment she had alighted from the train and found her formidable hostess and this strangely sinister Mr. Baxter waiting to meet her on the platform, she had begun to smile brightly and had been doing so ever since.
"When the rain is over, Mr. Baxter, you must show Miss Shoemaker the rose garden."
"I shall be delighted," said the efficient Baxter. He flashed gleaming spectacles in her direction, and a momentary panic gripped Sue. She feared that already this man had probed her secret. In his glance, it seemed to her, there shone suspicion.
"My brother is a great rose grower.
Yes, isn't he? I mean, I think roses are so lovely. The efficient Baxter's large spectacles and heavy eyebrows were beginning to sap Sue's morale. "How nice and old everything is here," she went on hurriedly. "What's that funny-looking gargoyle thing over there?" What she actually referred to was a Japanese moss which hung from the wall, and it was unfortunate that the Honorable Galahad should have chosen this moment to come out of the smoking room.
"My brother Galahad," said Lady Constance. "Galahad, this is Miss Schoonmaker."
"Really?"
The Honorable Galahad trotted briskly up.
"Is it? Oh, bless my soul. Well, well, well."
"How do you do?" said Sue, smiling brightly.
"How are you, my dear? I know your father intimately."
The bright smile faded. Sue had tried to plan this venture of hers carefully, looking ahead for all possible pitfalls, but that she would encounter people who knew Mr. Schoonmaker intimately, she had not foreseen.
"Haven't seen him lately, of course. Let me see. Must be, 25 years since we met. Yes, yes, oh, yes, yes, quite 25 years.
"I wasn't born then," she said. She became aware of a drooping presence at her side.
"My niece, Millicent," said Lady Constance. "Millicent, my dear, this is Miss Schoonmaker."
"How do you do?" said Sue, smiling brightly. "How do you do?" said Millicent, like the silent tomb breaking its silence. Sue regarded her with interest. So this was Hugo's Millicent. She was startled to observe in the girl's eye a look of surprise. "Ronnie's friend?" asked Millicent. "The Miss Schoonmaker Ronnie met at Biarritz?" "Yes," said Sue faintly. "But I had the impression that you were very tall. I'm sure Ronnie told me so."
"I suppose almost anyone seems tall to that boy,"
said the Honorable Galahad. Sue breathed again. Life at Blandings Castle was plainly going to be a series of shocks.
"Have you seen Ronald anywhere, Millicent?"
asked Lady Constance. "Not since lunch."
"I saw him half an hour ago," said the Honorable Galahad. "He came mooning along under my window. I called him, but he just grunted and wandered off."
"Well, he will be surprised to find you here," said Lady Constance, turning to Sue. "Unless you told him, Galahad."
"I didn't tell him, no. Never occurred to me that he knew Miss Schoonmaker. Forgot you'd met him at Biarritz. What was he like then? Reasonably cheerful?"
Yes, I think so."
"Didn't scowl and jump and gasp and quiver all over the place?"
"No."
"Oh, something must have happened when he went up to London. It was after he came back that I remember noticing that he seemed upset about something. Ah, the rain stopped."
Lady Constance looked over her shoulder.
"The sky still looks very threatening," she said, "but you might be able to get out for a few minutes. Mr. Baxter," she explained, "is going to show Miss Schoonmaker the rose garden."
"No, he isn't,"
said the Honorable Galahad, who'd been scrutinizing Sue through his monocle with growing appreciation.
"I am. Old Johnny Schoonmaker's little gal. Why, there are 100 things I want to discuss."
The last thing Sue desired was to be left alone with the intimidating Baxter. She rose quickly. "I'd love to come," she said. They went out, and a moment later, the efficient Baxter, starting as if a sudden thought had entered his powerful brain, rose abruptly and made quickly for the stairs.